Good morning. How many, I'm just curious, how many of those here in this room grew up attending what you would call Sunday school? Many, many people. So just kind of go back there in your mind. Transport yourself back to Sunday school for a second. What are some of the things that you remember? The sights, the sounds. For me, it was the flannel board. Did you guys have that flannel board? Uh-huh. So each week they would slap a new character up on the flannel board for us to learn about, right? Or maybe for you the sights and the sounds include the glue, right, for the crafts or all the goofy things that they had us do in Sunday school to create some kind of parallel between these stories and our little minds. For me, I feel like all the stories that we ever talked about in Sunday school, it was a prerequisite that they had to have an animal in them. Okay, like if the story didn't have an animal in it, no Bible story that day, you know? Which I think is actually kind of a bad model, because some of the stories in the Bible that have animals in them are really actually pretty bizarre. But they didn't care. As long as it has an animal, we were good. This morning, we are starting a new series called Sunday School, Christ in the Stories of Our Youth. And before I start bashing on Sunday school, I just want to make a disclaimer that here at Christ Church, I think we do Sunday school really well, okay? Like Dawn and Cindy, everyone that does Sunday school for kids, they're really thoughtful about how they teach these stories, and so they do a great job. They're not included in this bashing that's about to happen, okay? Sorry. So, because I think we have a problem with the way we typically teach Sunday school stories. My experience was, I'll just speak for myself, my experience was that when we looked at these different Sunday school stories, the lens that we viewed them through is that these characters, these human characters, heroes and heroines, were people to be looked up to and emulated. That their best qualities are things that we should strive for. And that's not bad, okay? It's not bad, but it's not enough. It doesn't go far enough. The Bible, the Old Testament included, is not just a book of great characters that should be emulated, although it certainly is that, right? The Bible has a greater purpose. From the first page to the last, the Bible is about God. And the Bible is about God's, specifically the revelation of Jesus Christ, right? From the very first page of the Bible to the very last, God has been about the same work: rescuing, redeeming, saving his people through Jesus. From the first page to the last. These Old Testament stories are trying to do more than just give us good examples. They're more than just moral imperatives for us. These stories are pictures of Jesus. Types of Jesus. Foreshadows of Jesus. And if we read these stories, these Old Testament stories, these old classic Sunday school stories, and we fail to see Jesus in them, then we are missing something. I've been learning to read the Bible in this way, where I'm looking for Jesus in the pages of Scripture, every single page. And that way of reading the Bible has really changed my life. Because when you read the Bible and you look at these characters and say, man, I want to be like these characters, for me, what ends up happening is that when I read that story, I kind of put a weight or a burden on myself, right? You think, man, I want to be like these people. I want to have their faith, their courage, their fill in the blank, right? And so I put this burden on my shoulders and I think, oh, if I could just be like these people. And when you do that, when you read the Bible like that and then you stop, you set down the Bible feeling a sense of guilt, right? And no wonder so many of us are like not interested in the Old Testament, right? If that's the way we read it, where we just see them as, man, these great characters that we want to emulate, and we put that burden on, we just walk away from the Bible feeling lousy. And that's no way to read the Bible. We carry that burden with us when we leave. However, when we start to see these characters and how these characters in their truest sense point to Jesus, his life, his death, the work that he accomplished, it allows us to take that burden back off and set it back down. So when I read the Bible these days, especially the Old Testament, it's this picking up and putting off of this burden every time I read the Bible. It goes something like this. Oh man, this character is so amazing. I want to be like them, but I never will be. But Jesus did. Jesus was the perfect version of this character, and my faith is in him. We need to look for Jesus in these stories. And if we fail to see him, then we have missed the truest meaning of these stories. And I'm not just making this way of reading the Bible up, okay? Jesus taught his disciples to read the Bible in this way, to look for him, to look for Jesus on every page. There's this great story in the Bible. So after Jesus died and was resurrected, he was kind of wandering the earth there. And there were two of his followers that were on a road to Emmaus. And these two followers were very depressed and confused and downtrodden by what they had just seen with Jesus crucified. They were so confused and so down. And Jesus slyly kind of slips up next to them. And they don't recognize him. And Jesus starts asking, "What are you guys so depressed about?" And they say, "Haven't you heard about the Messiah has been crucified?" And Jesus says to them this: "Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself." Starts way back with Moses and the prophets, and Jesus connects all the dots for them. He says, all these writings were about me. Now, the coolest part of the story is a little bit later in the story, when Jesus does the big reveal, right, and shows these guys that he's actually Jesus, and then he immediately, like, disappears. And these two followers of Jesus are just left staring at each other with their jaws just hanging open, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that was Jesus, right? And then they say this to each other: "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened up the scriptures to us?" Their hearts burned within them. The burning of conviction, the burning of profound meaning. I want my heart, when I read the Bible, to burn with passion. These stories, if we can learn to read these stories in this way, that it adds profound meaning. I'll add that reading the Bible in this way is actually just really fun. Okay, you think the Bible is boring. Once you start to peel back these layers of the Bible and start to see how deep and rich it is, it's just fun. So when I come to the Bible, whether it's the first page or the last page, I am looking for Jesus on every single page. It's fun. It's like a scavenger hunt, right? It's like, what thing, what character, what person, what in this story is pointing to Jesus? So, for this sermon series, Sunday School, Christ and the Stories of Our Youth, we're going to read the Bible. We're going to read these old stories. We have five kind of classic Sunday School stories, and we're going to read them in this way. We're going to peel back the layers together. What I'm saying is that there's two ways to read the Bible. There's the Sunday School way, where we just look at the character and say, let's be like that person. And then there's this way, where we look for Jesus on every page, and we realize that the story in its truest meaning is about what Jesus has already done. All right. So this week we're going to start at the very beginning, Adam and Eve, one of the oldest stories in the Bible. And one of the cool things about this week, this story of Adam and Eve, is that the Bible actually does this for us. Okay, so what I mean by that is Paul, in the New Testament, takes the story of Adam and Eve, and he actually connects all the dots for us. We won't have that in every week when we talk about Jonah and the whale or whatever, but this week, Paul clearly lays out, this is how the story of Adam and Eve point to Jesus. So we're starting at the very beginning, and I know that all of us have maybe heard this story 1,000 times, right? I just encourage you this morning, when we talk about the story of Adam and Eve, put on fresh eyes this morning. Open yourselves up to see what God might be wanting to say to us about this story. This is one of the most important stories in the Christian faith and the Christian narrative. All right, without further delay, Adam and Eve, here we go. So let's just do a little context, right? Adam and Eve living in the Garden of Eden in perfect relationship with God. There is no fear. There's no disease. There's no conflict. There's no shame. There's no despair. And there's no death. All is simply perfection. And then the serpent entered the picture. Temptation came in. Satan first appeared to Eve in the form of a serpent, and he tempted both Adam and Eve, and they sinned. They did not resist the temptation. They doubted God, and they failed. They were then banished from the garden, banished both symbolically and literally from God's presence. Their sin drove a wedge between themselves and God. And this is where, in Sunday school, we shake our heads at them, right? Adam and Eve. Oh, tisk, tisk, tisk. How could you, Adam and Eve? Like, didn't you see that God is so good and this is just a serpent and he's lying to you? How could you not have seen it, right? And even I remember as a self-righteous, fifth grader, looking at this story like, you know what? If it had been me, right? You guys ever feel like that, right? Where you're like, you know what? When we read in the Bible, we start to look at them like kind of condescendingly, like, you know what? If it had been me, I would have resisted, right? That's the moral of the story. When people read a story like this, in many cases, I talked about character emulation. Like, we take the best qualities and we try and strive after them. In this story, it's actually the opposite, right? It's like anti-character emulation, right? We look at Adam and Eve, the hero and heroine of the story, and we say, oh, we got to do the opposite of them, right? We got to be the opposite of those guys. Adam failed the test. They sinned. So you should pass the test. You all, let's resist temptation. Don't sin. And I know it's one thing to talk about all this sin and temptation stuff kind of theoretically, but temptation and sin is something that we face every day of our lives, right? This is real life stuff. We're tempted every day, tempted to compromise our character, tempted to lash out at our colleagues or our family, tempted to despair about our life circumstances, tempted to actually hate people who stand in the way of our happiness. So we should resist temptation, right? We should try to succeed where Adam failed, right? Is that message true? Does the Bible teach that we should resist temptation? Yes, it absolutely does, right? I could put up 100 scriptures on this screen right now, but I'll give you 3, okay? Just 3. Matthew 26, watch and pray that you do not enter into temptation. 1 Corinthians 10, he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. 1 John 2, my little children, I am writing these things to you so that you may not sin. Does the Bible teach us to resist temptation? Yes. In fact, this is what our faith so often gets boiled down to, doesn't it? Either by people inside the church or outside, they think that Christianity, they think that the Bible is just a list of a bunch of rules and that all the Christians are just trying to keep from disobeying those rules, right? That's what people think. Resist temptation. Don't sin. Be a good person. Should we try to succeed where Adam failed? Absolutely. Look, I am like a spiritual formation guy, okay? Like, I care a great deal about spiritual formation. I actually believe that all of us can make progress in the spiritual life, that all of us can actually learn to sin less, that as Christ fills us up, as the Holy Spirit fills us up, as we get to know God more, that in 10, 20, 30 years, that I will actually be sinning less than I am now. I actually believe this stuff. I'm a spiritual formation guy. I think it's important that we should resist temptation. But for me, that is where Sunday school stopped. Resist temptation. Don't sin. All right, let's close our Bibles and sing He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, right? I'm not going to actually make you do that this morning. But there's a problem if we stop reading the story in Adam and Eve right there. There's a problem because that is not the full story. Earlier I talked about how Paul references this story of Adam and Eve. So he does that in primarily two passages, and we're going to look at those passages. The first one is this. 1 Corinthians 15:22, Paul says this. In Adam, all die. In Adam, all die. Paul is saying this story of Adam and Eve has real implications for us, all of us. Okay, hang with me just for a second while I give you a little church history lesson. Is that okay? Are we game for that? I'll keep it short, okay? So in the fourth century, there were two guys, Pelagius and Augustine. And they got in a huge debate about this very issue. What happened in the garden with Adam and Eve, how it affected all of humanity, okay? They got in this huge dispute. Pelagius said that Adam and Eve were just strictly bad examples for us. And that each of us is perfectly capable of choosing between right and wrong. Augustine, on the other hand, said, no, Pelagius, you are getting this all wrong. Augustine said that we all have original sin. That Adam and Eve's sin way back then broke something in humanity. Something that cannot be undone. Now, you guys all know who won that argument, right? You can imagine, right? Since almost none of you have heard of Pelagius, but everyone has heard of Augustine, right? Okay? Augustine won the day, okay? Augustine's view that Adam's sin had implications for all of us is true. We don't have an even shot at choosing between good and evil. Many people call it the sinful nature. It just means that the cards are stacked against us. In the battle between us and sin, it is not a fair fight. And this is true in our lives, right? Do me a favor and think for a second about, I know the confession comes a little later in the service, but just think for a second this morning about a sin that you committed this week. Just think for a second. I could think of a couple for myself, okay? Now, in this scenario, was it an Adam and Eve Garden of Eden moment, right? Where these two things were in front of you and you looked at them both squarely, the good and the bad, and you really pondered and maybe even made a pros and cons list, right? Of which one of these things am I going to choose? Am I going to choose evil or am I going to choose good? Look, it wasn't like that for me this week. For me, 9 times out of 10, when I sin, it feels almost automatic, right? It just, before I can even choose almost, it just is there, right? So for instance, totally hypothetically here, someone cuts me off on the highway. Hypothetical situation. I find myself like before I can even choose anything, I find myself muttering these angry phrases through gritted teeth, right? Before I can even choose, it just feels like it's there. It's just, it's in me. I have this predisposition to sin. So it's all fine to stand up here and say, hey, you know what, church, resist temptation, don't sin. But if we leave it at that, then you are going to live your life as a very frustrated Christian. Because you will try and you will try and you will muster all the strength that you possibly can to resist temptation and to not sin. But you will lose. Sometimes, dare I say, most of the time. So there has to be more to the story. And it comes really for us in that second passage that Paul talks about Adam and Eve. It's Romans 5. In Romans 5:14, Paul says this: Adam was a type of the one to come. Adam was a type of the one to come, Jesus. Adam points to Jesus. This story about Adam and Eve and the garden and the snake is not just about two people who sinned a long time ago. That story is like bright flashing neon signs pointing ahead to Jesus. So how is Adam like Jesus? In what ways are they similar? In what ways are they different? We're gonna compare and contrast for a second, okay? In what ways were they the same? And in what ways were they different? First, the same. They were both tempted, right? We talked already about Adam's temptation. Can you think of a time when Jesus was tempted? I hope so, because we had it read for us this morning in the gospel reading, right? Jesus spent 40 days in the wilderness being tempted by Satan. Satan appeared, kind of manifested to both Adam and to Jesus. He told them lies, and he asked for their obedience. Another way that they're the same, Jesus and Adam, is that their actions affected many, many, many people. Remember, Adam's sin left us with a deck stacked against us. But Jesus' actions would have implications for all of us, too. Let's talk about some of the ways that these two are different, Adam and Jesus. See, when Jesus faced temptation, he resisted. He resisted. He resisted that day in the desert, and he resisted every other day of his life. Hebrews 4:15 says this: we have one, Jesus, who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Adam was tempted by a fruit, right? A fruit that would maybe give them eyes to see the difference between good and evil. Jesus was tempted with all the kingdoms of the world, and he resisted. Has everyone seen that movie, The Passion of the Christ? You guys remember that story, or that movie came out a while ago? There's this great scene in that movie where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane, okay? So this is at the very end. So the story that Porter read this morning is about the very beginning of Jesus' ministry. Then the Garden of Gethsemane is at the very end of Jesus' ministry, right before he's going to be crucified. And we see Jesus being tempted again. Tempted at the beginning, tempted at the end, tempted every day in between. So we have this image of Jesus. He's sweating blood. He's just distraught. He's being tempted to not go to the cross, right? And Mel Gibson actually does this cool thing. He connects these dots between Adam and Jesus for us right there on the movie screen. So do you remember, Jesus is sweating blood. He's kind of overcome the temptation, and then a snake slithers by. Okay? Right? That's like total callback to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, right? And do you remember what happens? Jesus stomps the head of the snake. So Adam and Eve listen to the snake. They worship the snake. Jesus destroyed him. Jesus resisted sin, and not for himself, but for all of humanity. Another way that they're different is Adam's sin brought death into the world. He set the whole world in decay. And look, I don't need to go on a long time talking about that, right? We see this in the world all around us. This week, two teachers killed by their students. Two teachers. It's horrible. We see the result of this sin and death in our lives all around us every day. We see it in the news, but we also see it in ourselves, right? We sin, and we're the victims of sin. This sin separates us from God. We feel distant from Him. Millions of people around the world do not know Him and are drowning in their self-consumed sin life. Adam's sin brought death, but Jesus's actions, His resisting of temptation, brought life. Life. And here's what I think is the coolest part. Jesus's actions were stronger than Adam's. Okay, so if Adam's sin brought death, and if Adam's sin left us with this sinful nature, what an equal action would have been if Jesus kind of undid all of that, right? Where He said, you know what, Adam failed the test, and that resulted in a fail of the test for all of us. So what I'll do is I'll let you guys take the test for yourself. I'll take you back to the garden where you have this clear choice between good and evil, and you can choose and you can pass or fail the test on your own. That would have been an equal action. But that is not what Jesus did. Jesus passed the test for all of us. In fact, He aced the test. And He gives you and me that score. A perfect score. Jesus' actions give us life. His perfect life is a free gift to all of us. So that means that even though you and I have sinned a lot this week, when God looks at those who are in Christ, He sees Jesus' sinless life. That means that when we die and we stand before God, we don't wear all of our sins on our sleeves. No, we will be covered by Jesus' perfect life. The story of Adam and Eve is not about two people failing a test a long time ago. The story points to Jesus, the one who aced the test, resisted sin for all of us, whose perfect life is given to you.